guessing what the topic was, and it wasn't really an easy question to answer. Then he asked me if there was a song, and that wasn't the easy question to answer either. So I said no. So this might seem a little bit random, as I often am. In the Old Testament, there are lots of stories that we know quite well, and the thing that you'd be thinking about, the two things we probably think about, are God and the people. So today, we're going to not look at God, well, we are looking at God and people, but the focus is actually objects, the things in those stories. So for the first time ever, I think, I'm attempting, and it's going well so far, to read through the whole Bible in a year. I have read it all before, but not trying to get through it in a year. So that's a lot of history over the past few weeks. I'm just starting 2 Chronicles. Yeah. And lots of stories, most of them I vaguely recall, some of them I knew quite well, some of them I thought, I'm sure I've never read this before, but then I'm sure I have read it before and just forgotten it. And so we're going to look at 5 different objects that teach us something about our lives. And some of these objects you'll be familiar with, and some of them you'll perhaps be less familiar with. So, that means that there are, well, more than 5 different readings, but there are 5 selections of readings. So I'm not going to read you whole stories, but selections. I say, I'm not going to read you anything, actually. So some of the young people have volunteered, and they did volunteer, to read. So Amy's going to come and read our first selection from Exodus. So it's Exodus 4, and then Exodus 14. Spot the object.
Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me, or listen to me, and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'?' Then the Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' 'A staff,' he replied. The Lord said, 'Throw it on the ground.' Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake. He ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, 'Reach out your hand and take it by the tail.' So Moses reached out and took the hold of the snake and turned back into a staff in his hand. 'This,' said the Lord, 'is that thing. This,' said the Lord, 'is so that they may believe that Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you.' Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. It will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and his army, through the chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord, and I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen.' Then the angel of the God who had been traveling in front of Israel's army withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of the cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side and light to the other, so neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea and on dry ground, and the wall of water on the right and on the left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all the Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them out into the sea."
Thank you, Amy. So, you've probably spotted the object there is the staff, Moses' staff. So Moses had a staff. I always imagine Moses with his staff, apart from when he's in the basket going down the Nile, I suppose. He's always got a staff in his hand. And he had his staff, presumably, as part of his trade, if trade's the right word, as a shepherd. So a staff is a very normal, mundane object. And he had it with him while God spoke to him from the bush, which I suppose is not a surprise, because he would have always had it with him, because in my mind he's always got it with him. I bet in Kevin's picture book, Moses is holding a staff. So, he had it with him as God spoke to him from the burning bush, and then God used that staff as a sign that God was with him. So Moses is worried that the people of Israel, back in Egypt, won't believe that God has sent him. And this is one of the signs that God gives to Moses, that his staff can become a snake and then become a staff again. And so Moses carries on using the staff to perform miracles. So the Nile turns to blood when the staff is put in it. And probably most famously, as Amy read to us, the sea parts in two because of Moses is doing as God says and holding the staff. And so the staff is a sign that God is with Moses. And it's also a way for God to enact these miracles. It shows Moses and it shows the Israelites that God is in control. And it's used by God to save the Israelites from slavery. But it is just a staff. It's an ordinary object that God uses to do these miraculous things. The staff isn't magic. God uses the staff to do great things. So, I see that applies to us because we might feel that our lives are quite ordinary. Or even if our lives themselves are ordinary, parts of them are pretty ordinary. The normal, the mundane, getting up every morning, doing what you do every day, etc. Normal, boring, mundane. But Moses' staff teaches us that those ordinary, mundane, normal things can be used for miraculous, extraordinary things. Those ordinary parts of our life that we might dismiss just as normal, God can use in ways that we never predict. And I'd only just realised when Amy read it, actually, that when the staff turned into a snake, Moses ran from it, which is not really a surprise. This ordinary object did something very extraordinary that shocked and surprised Moses, something he wouldn't have expected. But it's interesting that the staff only turned into a snake after Moses had thrown it on the ground. And so I think that's a good metaphor for our lives. God wants to use our ordinary lives, whatever that means, for great things. But we have to lay down our lives. We have to sacrifice our life, give it over to him, and then he can do the miraculous things. He had to do as God commanded. Each time God did something through the staff, God told Moses what to do with it, and he was obedient. So we also have to be obedient. Lay down our lives before God so that he can use what we give to him. And it might be that we see genuinely miraculous things. But we have to give him what we have so that he can use it. But I think also, as the staff teaches us, he uses us, our ordinary lives, as witnesses to his presence. So it might not be that you go around performing miracles every day, or God performs miracles through you every day, but your ordinary life is taken by God and is a witness to him. If you sacrifice your life to him, you give it over to him, he teaches people that he's there. And of course, he uses us as an instrument to help perform the greatest miracle, which is the miracle of salvation. God saved the Israelites from slavery, not Moses, not the staff, but the staff was an instrument to help with that. And that's what we can do too. We can tell people, we can show people the gospel so that they can be saved, which is a great miracle. So, that's our first object. We can do great things, miraculous things, even though we might think our lives are ordinary. So we move on in time now. The Israelites have entered the promised land, and they've had a period of time with the judges, which doesn't go particularly well. They ask for a king, even though God says you're best off without a king. And David, eventually after Saul, becomes king. But this is just before David becomes king. So Daniel is going to come and read to us from 1 Samuel 17, starting at verse 40, and then verses 48 to 50. This is 1 Samuel 17. Again, it's quite easy to spot the object.
Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and, with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistines. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him.
Thank you. So, object number 2, David's sling. Again, another shepherd. and David would have used his sling on a daily basis to help him do his job. So again, a sling, an ordinary object, I say that, don't think many of you own a sling, but it's an ordinary object for a good shepherd. And the opportunity arises for David to defeat Goliath with what he knew he had. And you might remember in the story that Saul says to him, take my armour, and David can't, it's too much for him. And he says, no, I'll just go out with my sling. And he takes his sling, and I think he said 5 stones, and he only needs to use one. He knows that he can, or he thinks at least, he can't, how confident he is, we're not sure, but he definitely thinks he can defeat Goliath with just that 1 stone. So he uses a skill he knew he had, and that skill came from God. So you might think this is quite similar to the staff, an ordinary object doing something great. But it's not quite the same, because this isn't a miracle. It's quite incredible that he could kill a giant with a stone, but it's not a miracle, it's not something impossible that's happened. And the sling is actually being used in the way that David would have always used it. Moses wouldn't have used his staff to do those things that God told him to do. David was just doing what he usually did with his sling. It's just that instead of there being a wolf, it was a giant. So David uses his God-given ability, he uses the object that he has to do something great. And again, we can apply that to our own lives. There are many things that God has given us that you might think, again, are quite mundane. The gifts, the skills, the talents, abilities, resources that you use every day, at work, at home, whatever those things may be, that are just ordinary. The things you do every day. And that work we do every day is important. We needed shepherds at the time. So David was a good shepherd, and it's important that we do what we do well with the resources we have. But also there are those times when we use those skills for something different, to do something great for God. We don't need some miracle to happen. We don't need some transformation in the sling. It just is a sling, and we use it for what we know we can use it for. We give to God what we have, and he does great things through it. We know the skills we have, and so we use them. We take up those opportunities to do something important. But with David, bravery, I think, is the key thing. Moses had to be obedient in throwing the staff on the floor and using it in the way God told him to. David has to be brave. He has to be confident that he can go and do this, to kill this giant. Nobody else dare go. And here he is, a shepherd with a sling. He's confident he can do it. He's brave. And he says, doesn't he, you might recall, that he knows that God is with him, that the armies of heaven are with him, and so he can win. So I think the first message for us is, don't underestimate what we have. Those things that are ordinary, those gifts that you have that you use at work or at home, are things that God can do great things through. The things you do are important. But also, be brave, be confident to use those skills. It might be slightly outside your comfort zone, slaying giants. Don't wait for some miraculous transformation. God's given you what you need so that you can do what he wants you to do. So go for it. I don't think that's easy. But we do need to be brave. We need to try. Take those opportunities. So, that's subject number 2. Number 3, we go forward in time again to the time of other kings, and we meet Elijah and Elisha. So Daniel's going to come again, and he's going to read one verse from 1 Kings 19, and then a few verses from 2 Kings chapter 2. So 1 Kings 19, and then 2 Kings chapter 2.
So Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was ploughing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him. Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, and struck the water with it. The water divided to the right and to the left, and the two of them crossed over on the dry land. Elisha then picked up Elijah's cloak that had fallen from him and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. He took the cloak that had fallen from Elijah and struck the water with it. Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah? He asked. When he struck the water, it divided to the right and to the left. And he crossed over.
Excellent, thank you. So I'm going to repeat myself again. A cloak is a pretty ordinary object. Mundane. Again, you always imagine Elijah wearing his cloak. And this cloak is a symbol of God's presence and power, again. And much like Moses parting, or God parting the Red Sea through Moses and the staff, we see the water being parted here through the cloak. So the cloak, I think, primarily is a symbol of the ministry of God through Elijah, his presence with Elijah. And then the cloak is passed on to Elisha. It must be quite a comical scene. Elijah comes up and throws a cloak on Elisha and then seems to run off again. So the cloak is passed on. So I say common, I've not heard it for years, but people used to say, didn't they? Pass the mantle. And obviously this is where this comes from. Elijah had a ministry. The cloak was, again, a symbol of the ministry. And he passes that on to Elisha. Although Elisha has to then wait for a bit until it's permanently passed on, when Elijah's taken up to heaven. So Elisha and others would have seen God at work through Elijah and the cloak. And so when Elijah's taken up to heaven, Elisha takes the cloak, and he's hopeful that the ministry will have passed on. He's hopeful that the Spirit of God is going to be with him too. And so then he also strikes the water with the cloak, and the water parts. So the message here, again, similar, I suppose, but we have to pass on the ministry. So our first job is to recognise the ministry that God has given you. What is your cloak all about? What is it that you're doing for God? And we need to serve faithfully with that cloak, as Elijah did for many years. And again, God can do great things to bless other people. But a time might come, or will come, when it is time to pass on the mantle. So we need to be prepared to follow God's calling as long as he calls us. To do what God calls us to do while he's calling us to do it. And to realise when it's time to pass on the mantle, to find a successor, or to allow God to show you the successor. And it's important we realise that God chooses that role. God chose Elisha to carry on the ministry of Elijah. So God can then do miraculous things, do great things, through whoever comes next. Because it wasn't Elijah that was doing these great things, it was God through Elijah. So the ministry is passed on to Elisha, who asks for a double portion of Elijah's spirit, and he performs twice as many miracles, apparently, which is interesting. So only God does the miracles. He wants to bless people through us, through the ministry that we have. So maybe it's time for you to think about passing on a mantle. Or maybe it's time for you to take up a new mantle. To realise what ministry you're being called to, or what ministry you're being called to pass on. But maybe not. Maybe God is saying to you, stick with your cloak. That's where I want you at the time. It's your cloak, your sling, it's what you can do, and you're doing it well, so carry on. Don't try and pass the mantle on to somebody when God wants you to hang on to it. If he wants you to pass it on, he'll pick the successor and show you. But if he wants you to carry on, we need to be faithful. We need to keep going. And sometimes we might get weary. And as Paul says, don't become weary in doing good. Keep going. Keep your cloak on. But be prepared to listen when God tells you that it is time to pass it on. So those three objects have something in common. We're taking a slight change now, and this is the one that surprised me, or the second part of this surprised me. So we're going to go back to Moses, but then forwards in time. So James is going to come and read Numbers 21, 4 to 9, and then 2 Kings 18, 3 to 4. So Numbers 21, and then 2 Kings 18.
The Israelites left Mount Hor and went on the road towards the Red Sea in order to go around the country of Edom. But the people became impatient on the way and grumbled at God and Moses. They said, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt to die in the desert? There is no bread and no water, and we hate this terrible food." So the Lord sent them poisonous snakes. They bit the people, and many of the Israelites died. People came to Moses and said, "We sin that the Lord will take away these snakes." So Moses prayed for the people. The Lord said to Moses, "Make a bronze snake and put it on a pole. When anyone who is bitten looks at it, that person will live." So Moses made a bronze snake and put it on a pole. Then when a snake bit anyone, that person looked at the bronze snake and lived. Hezekiah did what the Lord said was right, just as his ancestor David had done. He removed the places where gods were worshipped. He smashed the stone pillars and cut the Asherah idols. Also, the Israelites had been burning incense to Nehushtan. The bronze snake Moses had made, Hezekiah broke it into pieces.
Thank you, James. So I knew about the bronze snake being used to save the people when the snakes came in, but I didn't realise it had become an object of worship. So, again, we meet Moses. He follows God's command. He makes the bronze snake, which must be no mean feat, but he does. He makes a bronze snake, and then those that have been poisoned by the snakes can look to this bronze snake, and they can live. And Jesus uses this as an allegory for himself. When he's lifted up on the cross, people who look to him are saved from death because they're forgiven for their sins. But over time, this object has become idolised. And the commentaries I read suggested that it was probably quite recent. So Hezekiah stopped this. It's probably quite recently before Hezekiah that it became an object of worship, because the pagan people living in what became Israel did often worship snakes. So it probably wasn't the case that it would always been idolised in this way. But obviously it had been accepted for however long. And Hezekiah sees that this is wrong, and as part of his religious reforms, destroys the object. So this object that had been given to the Israelites to save them had become something that was harming them. God had given them something that could help them live, and it had begun to take them away from God. So there might be good things in our lives, positive things that God has given us, that we might be in danger of idolising. God gives us people, he gives us hobbies, church perhaps, our service in church, our jobs, maybe possessions, things we have that are good things. God has given those things to bless us, but it's important we don't become obsessed with them. It's important they don't become idols. They don't become more important than God. They're positive things, they're gifts from God that he sent to help us. So we shouldn't allow them to start harming us by taking us away from God. We need to acknowledge that they come from him and that he is the only person that we worship. We shouldn't take too great a perspective on something that God has given us and raise it above where it should be. So maybe there's something in your life that is taking the place of God, that is in danger of becoming an idol. If that's the case, we need to stop and think, reassess its role. Maybe we're spending too much time doing a certain thing and neglecting God. Maybe something's becoming more important to us than God. And we need to reassess. Now, it might be that it's not too late to just change your perspective. But it could be the case that it is too late, and the only way you can avoid that idol is by getting rid of it. And who knows what that could be for you. But it's important that we're thankful for what God gives to us, but we recognise that it comes from him. And removing that thing, whatever it is that has become an idol, could be painful. I'm sure the Israelites were not happy when this bronze snake was destroyed, but it's necessary so that we can become what God wants. So we need to be careful. We should be thankful for what God has given us, but not allow those things to become more important to him. So our last object is, again, in 2 Kings. So James is going to come again and read a few verses from 2 Kings, chapter 22.
Micaiah, the priest, high priest, said to Stephen, the royal secretary, I found the book of the teaching in the temple of the Lord. He gave it to Stephen, who read it. Then Stephen, when the king heard the words of the book of the teaching, he tore his clothes to show how upset he was. He gave orders to Micaiah, the priest,
Ahikam, son of Stephan, Akbor, son of Micaiah, Stephan, the royal secretary, and Isaiah, the king's servant. These were the orders. Go and ask the Lord about the words in the book and that was found. Ask for all the people and for all of Judea. The Lord's anger is burning against us because our ancestors did not obey the words of this book. They did not do all the things that were written for us to do.
Thank you, James. Well done with the names. So, it seems quite incredible that the book of the law had somehow got lost. So, the law had been written down, what God had told Moses to give to the Israelites, and it had got lost. And it's not been lost like the Ark of the Covenant was lost at one point, stolen, taken. It sounds to me like it was put in a bottom drawer and just forgotten about. And then somebody was clearing the drawer out and found it. Oh, here it is. So they've forgotten about this law, and when it's rediscovered, the king is distraught to realise that the law wasn't being followed. So it's more important than the object. The object is the book of the law, but what matters is the fact they've not been obeying the law. If they'd all remembered it off by heart and passing it on, the book wouldn't matter so much, but they hadn't been, clearly. They'd completely forgotten, and as we know from the story of the various kings and what the people were doing at the time, they were doing all kinds of things that God had told them they shouldn't be doing, for their good. So the king reads the law, is distraught, and then he calls the people together and asks them to recommit themselves to follow the law, to avoid the consequence of their sin. He looks back in history and he realises people have not been following the law, so now it's time to start. And again, the beginning of more religious reforms. So the law must have been important to Israel at first, but I would guess that it gradually became less important. It gradually became forgotten. And they needed to be refound to bring the people back to God. So the first obvious reminder is that we need to read and obey God's word. Don't need to get dusty in a bottom drawer. But also there are many other things that God gives to us, the blessings that he gives to us, to help us. That's why the law was given, to help the people be close to God. God gives us other things, privileges that help us grow close to him. Worship, prayer, each other, fellowship together. And those things seem really important to us maybe at first, when we first become a Christian, but it's easy to start neglecting them, to find that we're too busy for some of these things, to have other priorities. We've not abandoned God necessarily, but we've abandoned some of the things that he's given us to bless us. And so we need to stick close to those things. Probably doesn't happen all of a sudden, but it happens gradually, to the point where you might not notice it. So when the law was found, they didn't realise they'd lost it. So we need to be thankful for the things that God gives to us, those privileges, those blessings to help our relationship with him. So other people, spending time in worship, listening to teachings, the gifts he's given us mustn't be neglected so that we can stay close to him, so that he can bless us, and so that we can bless others. So we need to keep hold of those good things that God has given us. So those are our five objects, and I hope that at least one of those has spoken to you. But if we leave it there, we've missed the point. Because at the end of the day, these are just objects. They do teach us important lessons. So we've learned that God can use what we sacrifice to him to do great things, to bring others to salvation. We learned through David Sling that God uses our everyday gifts to do great things, but we have to be brave. We've learned that God asks us to carry on with our ministries as long as he wants us to, but to pass it on when the time's right, and to be willing to receive a new ministry, if that's what God calls us to. We've learned from the snake, the bronze snake, that we should accept and be thankful for the blessing God gives to us, but not idolise them. And we've learned from the law that was lost, not to forget those good things that God gives to us, and to stay close to him. But that only makes sense if we keep in mind that God is always the most important thing. He's more important than all those objects. He's more important than all the things in our lives that we need to hold on to. It was God that made it so that Moses did miracles through the staff. It was God who gave David the skill to use his sling and brought about the circumstance where he could kill Goliath. It was God who gave Elijah and Elisha their ministries. It wasn't the cloak. It was God who healed the people bitten by the snakes, not the bronze snake itself. It was God who wrote the law and gave it to the Israelites to use. So while we need to think about how we look after and value and protect and use what God gives to us, we need to remember that they all come from God and that He is the most important thing and that He should be put first. And when we do that, we find that we're using these objects, these things that He's given us, we're using our lives in the way that He wants. So after Martin said, "Is there a song?" and I said, "No," I thought of one, but I don't know whether we know it. And the fact I thought of it afterwards, I think, proves that God just wants us to hear the words and not sing. So, So I'm just going to read this. I think I'll read it twice. It's quite short. I read this as a prayer, which just summarises what I hope I've been saying. Jesus, my passion in life is to know You. May all other goals bow down to the journey of loving You more. Jesus, You've showered Your goodness on me, given Your gifts so freely. But there's one thing I'm longing for. Hear my heart's cry as my prayer for this life. Above all else, give me Yourself. Jesus, my passion in life is to know You. May all other goals bow down to this journey of loving You more. Jesus, You've showered Your goodness on me, given Your gifts so freely. But there's one thing I'm longing for. Hear my heart's cry as my prayer for this life. Above all else, give me Yourself. Amen.